This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Doctor in the House, brought to you by AIA Vitality.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment. It's a Friday, which only means Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, is in the studio with us. Welcome to the show, George. How
Thank
are you
Thank you,
today?
Mira. I'm very good.
Finished catching your breath there? After rushing in at the last minute, what were you doing outside?
I was saving lives.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you were. Okay. We have today Dr. Arif Anwar, resident geneticist in the studio, who's shaking his head at George's answer. You have every right to do that.
No, he's shaking his head because, you know, he's, I know. He agreed. He agreed. I was saving lives.
Yes. Sure. Welcome to the show, Dr. Arif.
Semi-resident.
Semi.
Becoming super busy. Yeah.
You are. We haven't seen you for the longest time.
Super busy.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm happy that you managed to join us today.
Yes. I thought, well, seeing George again is motivation.
I'm sure that's not an attraction, but never mind. Okay. So we are discussing an article which we came across in the BBC about health and fitness and how it involves your DNA. And, you know, there have been these male order tests which people are doing in the UK, where you can actually get the kit, do a, you know, cheek swab or saliva swab or whatever it's called, and then send it back, and then they get your DNA analyzed, and then they tell you what you should be eating, how you should be exercising, and all of that stuff. So fitness fanatic Mandy Mayer, who's 56 years old, she was featured in this BBC article where she said she exercised several times a week but felt that she had hit a plateau. And her personal trainer is the one who suggested she try this mail order DNA test. And after sending off her swab of her saliva, she received a report on her fitness and her diet, and she was very impressed. She has 3 months later, after changing her food, her diet and her exercise regime, she has dropped several kilos, actually. She's moved from a size 12 to size 10. And she attributes this leaner figure to understanding more about her genetic code. And that's why Dr. Arif is here today.
That's right. We're very excited, you know.
I have a surprise. I have a surprise for you both.
Oh, right. Okay. We want to know, because
I'm so afraid.
You're afraid? It's like, you know, this is the only time that I'm enticed now. I'm on your side this time.
I'm going to save it for later.
I hate surprises.
I don't want to ruin the show. We'll save it for later.
I have some idea what the surprise is. It's probably available in Malaysia now.
This should be on prime time. Are you recording this?
No, we're not on television. No, it's podcasted.
What do you mean by genetic code, Dr. Arif? I mean, she said she understands, by understanding her genetic code, she was able to make changes to her lifestyle. And but what do you mean by genetic code?
So, I mean, we all have DNA in our cells, and we have 10 trillion cells. We're born with the DNA as a mixture between our parents, our mother and father. Mm-hmm. And the DNA in our cells remains pretty much the same our whole lives. And it influences, it's like the driver for a lot of most things. I don't want to say everything, but most things that happen inside our bodies. How we react to stress, how we react to what our chances are of developing certain diseases, how we metabolize certain things. It can be something like how quickly we process a drug. For example, when you have morphine, which is a painkiller, some people process it very quickly. Some people process it much slower. Mm-hmm. Some people process it at a normal rate. And that actually is determined by your DNA, by your genetic code, by your DNA code. How quickly you metabolize, how quickly you process caffeine in your body is also determined by your DNA. Mm-hmm. So there are many things that are determined by your DNA. There's also evidence that how you respond to, how good you are to responding to, like this Mandy person.
She wanted some sort of like tailor-made. She wanted to understand her body a little bit better, mm-hmm. so that she can actually sculpture to the form that she wants it to be. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay.
I mean, when Mira chose this article, I just thought, oh, this is another article that actually will just say, okay, look, these are the chances of you getting X disease, like heart disease, yes. and then you
cancer,
know, cancer, and then so this is how you should live your life. Mm. You know, so that, like, you know, stay away from cigarettes, stay away from the alcohol, and then you should live your life. I actually didn't actually look at it until last night. When I looked at it, I thought, hang on a minute, this it's is different. A different level altogether. Yeah. And in fact, I actually have been quite excited about this. Is because, you know, I am
because
this
George,
manly person.
Because George is exercising for the first time in his life.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. He's looking better and better every year.
Absolutely,
that's right. So I am this manly person, right? Okay, right.
Have you hit a plateau?
I'm not sure. Because I'm, at the moment, I'm still kind of like on the peak at the moment. That's right.
How would you know that?
Well, I know
so
my
humble.
Body. So
humility.
Humble. That's right.
Humility pouring out. So...
No, hang on a minute. You know, when Mira chose this, right? Okay, I was just thinking that, you know, she's definitely against it. You know, she said she feel I would can see that she would just come up question marks or why would the world be and that sort of thing. For the first time, I kind of am warming up to this idea.
And
of
for the first time, so am I.
Got it completely wrong.
Because it had nothing to do with disease.
It's not about disease.
It's not about disease.
And
about
it's
disease.
Lifestyle choices, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And if it works, why not? But I'm still not 100% convinced.
Okay.
But I am warming up to it.
Warming up to it. So we want to get the whole Klang Valley to join the conversation as well.
See, this whole science is called, part of this story is about nutrigenomics. It's called nutrigenomics.
What does that mean?
A word for Friday.
All right.
This is Friday's word of the day.
Okay. Elaborate.
Nutrigenomics. So basically, based on your DNA, certain changes in your DNA can influence how you process certain food, how good you're metabolizing certain foods, and how good you are at responding, for example, to exercise. Now, we all know people, I'm looking at myself maybe, who, you know, you try and try and try and you just cannot shift that last couple of kilos or the last 5 kilos or 10 kilos. So there are also genetic markers related to exercise potential. So what we're talking about here is exactly, like you both said, not disease, but response to certain foods.
Mm-hmm.
Guiding your diet based on your genetic makeup and guiding exercise routines based on your genetic makeup. So it's tailored to your genetic makeup. That's the theory of it anyway.
Okay. Well, but then again, how many, you know, just to go back a little. DNA and your genes, is that the same thing?
Well, so you have DNA inside your cells.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just go back a quick refresher on basic genetics. Mm-hmm. So inside each cell, you've got roughly 3 billion bits of DNA. And approximately 3 or 4 million, so only a couple of percent of it, are the genes.
Mm-hmm.
And the genes are the functional bits, the bits that go off and do stuff.
Right.
There are many famous genes, like insulin, for example, which is involved in sugar control. And there's actually 25,000 different genes that do different things. So your genes are the functional bits, and the rest of the DNA has lots of other functions, which I won't go into.
Okay. So the argument, and I was going to come to this only much later, is that your entire human genome has 20,000 to 25,000 mm-hmm. genes, as mm-hmm. you just mentioned. But most nutritional genetic tests only look at just a handful of genes.
Correct.
Yes.
So it's not enough. Is it enough to drive dietary decisions?
Okay, that's a really good question.
Fantastic.
Now, there has been decades of research, right, to narrow down what is it, for example, which gene is involved in and which changes or mutations in your DNA are involved in, for example, vitamin D or vitamin B deficiency. There are certain markers in a gene that are involved in exercise potential, the potential to lose fat as a consequence of doing aerobic exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not come, not somebody has not just sat there and made it up, right? It's not like we're going to randomly choose bits. This is decades of research that's led to narrowing down what is it that causes that change, that difference in terms of metabolism or caffeine or exercise or which food to eat, which food shouldn't you eat, for example.
So, I mean, we have collection of these data.
Yeah, there's a massive collection of
it. Why would people do that? Why would people come up with these collections of database to find out how do we process caffeine, for example, how do we burn fat? Why do we have a collection of these data?
Some of it has been found by accident because people are doing research all the time on hundreds of thousands of people. So hundreds of thousands, probably now millions of people's DNA has been sequenced, mm-hmm. you know, the We know what all their DNA does. And if you look at, and there's a process which all scientists use, which is annotation. So you take one person and say, okay, this person weighs this much, has this kind of diet, and it's a process of trying to figure out what is it that causes certain people who have this, who have the same weight, but they have a difference in DNA, and they seem to metabolize. Well, they seem to have very normal levels of vitamin D or vitamin B, or have very low levels, or they exercise 20 hours a day but don't seem to have any change in their weight. Mm-hmm. So it's a process of elimination. It's kind of like a murder mystery exercise, and you work out based on the annotation what somebody is and how they behave and what the results are of their behavior. And that's how scientists figure out which. Now, Mira's point is an excellent one. Very, very good question. For a Friday,
I ask you questions every day.
It's sorry, not just Friday.
Yeah, all right. Okay, all right.
You're on her bad side.
I haven't been on for a few months. It's been a while.
Did you anyway, see she rolled her eye?
No, it is a really good question because yes, there are 22,000-23,000 genes. These tests that are around, there's loads of tests out there in the market. Some of them are very good. Some of them are not so good. Some of them are hocus pocus. And you've got to figure out which ones are good and which ones are not.
How do we figure out?
Now, the other point is even the very best ones are not 100% because there's still things that we don't know. But the reliability of data is getting better and better all the time.
Let's dissect what you said. You know, some of them are
hocus pocus,
right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then some of them are the accuracy is questionable. And, you know, surely we cannot just pinned it down to one gene controlling one metabolic
activities,
right?
Okay, let's look at one example, the CYP1A2 gene, which controls mm-hmm. around 95% of caffeine metabolism. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Okay, so
I mean, 95% of caffeine metabolism, that will be quite accurate, sure. I would think.
there are a whole bunch of these CYP genes. If you Google it, there's a whole bunch of CYP genes.
CYP
genes, correct, exactly. They're metabolizing in the liver. Yeah, so George is absolutely right. He's a doctor, so he should know that.
Thank goodness.
Anyway, thank God. Yeah. So
saving lives.
This is why he's saving lives. So yes, they're mostly act in the liver, these genes, and they're involved in processing of things. You know, so processing of toxins, processing of things that the body wants to get rid of, processing of drugs, processing of caffeine, processing of morphine is done by a different CYP gene. So what's been discovered is some people have a mutation, which means that they process caffeine very quickly. It can be very dangerous for them. If they have two double espressos, it could be very dangerous for them. Similarly, for morphine, some people are very fast metabolizers of morphine because they have a certain mutation which makes that enzyme act very quickly. And when you administer, and you know, if George is doing it to one of his patients, he won't know. Mm-hmm. So you give the correct dose, not like somebody's made a mistake. The doctor will give the correct dosage of morphine, and the patient might feel very nauseous, and the morphine will go so fast that actually doesn't do its job in terms of pain relief. And in some people, it takes so long because they have a different mutation, a different form of the gene, mm-hmm. that they're in pain. And because it takes so long to act, the pain never goes away or doesn't really work. And same thing can happen with caffeine. You know, I mean, you either process it too quickly or not very, very slowly, or, you know, people in the middle who process it at a more average rate.
So knowing this information can help them to alter their lifestyles.
Yeah. So like Mandy, she says she didn't tolerate caffeine and refined foods very well, and that she responds better to endurance training than anything else. And with those changes, she became leaner, and she dropped from a size 12 to a size 10.
It just sounds too good to be true, right?
I mean, there really is, and I'm going back to George's point about, is it really just a single gene? Mm-hmm. In many instances, a single gene can be the majority of the reason why that particular thing happens. The example I said earlier, which is a really cool one, which I should really look at myself actually, is the fat loss potential using aerobic exercise. Mm-hmm. Different people have different potential. So, you know, you can
run very hard,
and you reach a plateau and you just, it, nothing else will happen, mm-hmm. No matter what you do. There's also a darker side to it. There's also a gene related to, it's not a disease per se, is if you overexercise, you can damage your heart. Mm-hmm. There's a marker that can tell you if you have that marker. A lot of those footballers who die on the field, they have that marker. Many of them have that marker.
Okay.
So they overexercise. So you have to be careful. So this, today we're talking about, not as we've said, not diseases, but diet.
And your genes. And diet, your genes. Exercise.
Diet, genes, and also drugs.
What do you call that again? The word on Friday?
Nutrigenomics.
Food.
How we metabolize and utilize nutrients is what nutrigenomics really is, isn't it?
I'm waiting for the right moment to do my surprise. Carry on.
Well, I mean, the amazing thing is that there's so many companies that are setting all these up.
Correct. You know? So all these mail order things, I don't know. It's, to me, it sounds dodgy, but it seems to have taken off. And people are actually purchasing and utilizing these services. So we'll come back and find out more up next. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 0377-109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0162019000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me, together with Dr. Arif Anwar, our semi-resident geneticist, because he's got no time to come on and do monthly shows with us. And, when George is here, you always know it's a Friday, so it's always good news. It's almost the end of the day.
Absolutely.
And today we're discussing your genes, diet and exercise, and how whether or not doing a gene test, would help you alter your diet and exercise to your advantage. And this is based on a study in the BBC where a fitness fanatic by the name of Mandy Mayer, she's 56, she bought this test it's a mail order test, a DNA test, and got herself tested. She altered her diet and exercise regime and lost moved down from a size 12 to a size 10. So we're trying to understand this relationship between genes and nutrient and exercise. And this is what something Dr. Arif, or rather the community, calls nutrigenomics, how we metabolize and utilize nutrients in the system. So we spoke about the hormone CYP182, which helps control 95% of caffeine metabolism, which George rightly put is in the liver. Thank God he got the right organ. There's another one.
Even though it's not. Exactly.
There's another one. Another one called GLUT2, and that's how your body metabolizes sugar. GLUT2, have you heard of that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? I think that one's more important than anything else. I think we all need something to figure out how we can reduce our sugar content.
That's right. It's like,
I mean, when we come to, I mean, I think one of the things, perhaps the number one thing that I would guess, that people who are conscious about their health and their diet, perhaps the number one thing that we all worry about is our weight, right? And I'm sure George will agree with me. I mean, being overweight is perhaps one of the worst things you can do for your health. Mm-hmm. You know, it has so many downstream bad side effects in terms of your health. So sugar is a key one. Also, there is a gene related to telling you when you are full, right? So I'm sure we can all think of this where, you know, some people, they eat a little bit and they say, oh, you know, that's it. I'm done. I'm full. And other people, without mentioning any names, you know, they can sit there in a buffet. And as we're coming up to Bukapasa month, you know, where people will sit there and just eat and eat and eat and eat. And you think, my goodness, you know, is there no end? And that actually, not to be rude, much of that is influenced by hormonal genetic factors. There is a genetic factor, a mutation, where if you have a different isoform, a different type of that gene, then you have to eat a lot more before your brain says, hold on a second, it's your brain that tells your stomach that you're actually full.
Mm-hmm.
So sugar and fat and feeling full, feeling satiated, are all related to different genes. And so wouldn't that be cool if you knew which one you had?
Of course.
Right? Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool if you knew which one you had? Wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
Well, this is a question we're going to ask the listening public.
I'm coming to my history.
It's a perfect world.
Wouldn't that be cool if you knew which one you had? Because then you can say, hold on a second, you know, I've got to be careful here because I'm either okay and I've got to I'm just being lazy, or I'm predetermined to eat more. So I've got to watch out and have more self-discipline.
But don't
so
you
Mira
think,
today,
yes, okay.
today, and George.
Yes,
surprise.
That's a surprise. Go on. Do tell us.
Oh no, he's digging into his bag.
Oh, I tell you. I tell you.
Wait.
Oh no,
wait,
he's going to make us do a test.
No, it's going to be a test.
This is for you.
So you're supposed to spit into this sputum.
Okay. This test is called. It's called Genoverse.
Did I tell you? Right. Okay. We're going to do this live. Right.
I'd love you to do this live. Now, all you've got to do...
Okay,
right,
just going to describe this
so
to the listening public.
Let me describe this
public.
Thing to you.
Okay.
So it looks like... It is. It doesn't look like.
I was wondering what that male or the kid looked
right?
like.
Yeah. It's called Genoverse.
Okay.
And basically, it's really simple. So
okay, so this is it. This is what Mandy went through, more or less.
This is... We're going to look at the same markers.
Okay, all right.
And we're going to tell you...
What markers are these?
The same markers. All the ones we talked about today...
As
an early Christmas present.
All right. I'm excited, but yet I'm cautious. Never mind.
Explain, Dr. Harry.
Let me explain how this works. Yeah. So we have a plastic tube here.
Yes.
And at the end of it, it looks like a giant earbud.
Yes,
but
correct.
It is not a giant earbud.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have to do is, it's sterile. So this is sealed. And you open it. And there are instructions on the other side. So now, have either of you eaten anything in the last 30 minutes?
Yes. Unfortunately.
No, that's not true. What? She's trying to avoid
it. I had taofu pho.
Okay, right. Okay.
I have eaten.
Alrighty. Okay, but we're already... No, you can't. Actually, Mira, I don't want to accuse you of being untruthful, but we're 27 minutes into this.
Exactly.
So okay, that's
all right. Half an hour.
So
half an hour
before the show
no,
started.
I think you're good. You're
okay.
Good.
You're good. Yeah, so
you pass. And George, I think, was driving furiously.
Yeah, that's furiously across Klang Valley.
Always being driven.
Okay.
So we have... Okay, so this is a blue... It looks like a blue tube with some liquid in it, and there's a giant kind of what looks like an earbud on the other end. What you have to do is... It's sealed.
Yes.
It's sterile.
Mm-hmm.
So you open it. You want to do it live?
I'm doing it now.
I'm doing it now. Okay, right.
No.
Okay, right. We're going to do this live on air. We're going to do our chin test.
What is that? What is that?
Just do it.
What is that liquid?
Open it.
Okay.
Finally, I've won.
Okay, we're seeing to we're warming to it. Come on, I'll open this for you. There you go. That's yours.
Right,
okay,
it.
Right.
So
I've got
open
mine.
It up.
The other way around, darling.
Okay. Open it up.
Okay.
All right.
Right. Okay.
Now,
so what do we do?
You see the swab thing.
Yep. Okay.
The earbud thing.
The spongy
you wipe
bit.
The inside of your mouth.
Uh-huh. He's
the left side
me up
10
here.
Times.
Uh-huh.
You rub the inside of your cheek.
Okay.
This is it. We know
do it 10 times.
All right.
Come on. Do it 10 times. Rub furiously 10 times. Keep going. All right. 10 times. Count. 7, 5, 6.
Done.
Okay.
All right, done.
Now do the other side of your mouth with the other side of the swab.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Rub furiously because you're trying to collect cells. And the cells inside of your cheek contain DNA.
Done.
Okay. Well, done. Now.
It's precious.
Mira's one's got some lipstick on it. Doesn't matter.
Is that going to contaminate the
result? I don't
think
that will affect the test.
Okay.
Now, open the blue tube.
Okay.
Unscrew the blue thing.
That, like this?
Yeah, unscrew it. Turn it over. Put it inside.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Put it inside. And shake it. Give it a shake.
Okay.
Close it first. Unscrew it. Screw it.
Yep.
Do you screw it tight? Mm-hmm. Now, shake it a few times.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I'm worried now.
Have you done it?
I've done it.
Oh, my God.
It.
What is he testing? We don't even know what we're testing.
We're mixed up.
No,
don't mix it up. Don't mix it up. Write some code.
All right,
on
okay.
It.
So, okay, right.
You can just write M
okay,
on
right,
it.
Okay, right, okay.
Go on.
Right. So.
That's it. We're done.
That's it. This is what Mandy went through.
This is what Mandy went through.
Okay.
And now what we're going to do is we're going to go back to the lab. Not right now.
Okay.
It's a Friday.
No.
It's a Friday.
And he's going to manipulate the results.
It's a Friday.
So, look, I want to know, right, what can this test for in the current Malaysian environment?
Okay. So this test is something we've developed. It's called Genoverse. If you go to the Syngenix Facebook site, you can see, you can actually have this test done as well.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take about 10 days to get a result.
Okay.
The results you get, now what we're going to do for you is we're going to focus it on the things we've talked about today.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to focus it on nutrigenomics.
Okay.
Right. Diet.
Okay.
We're going to focus it on drug metabolism, different types of drugs and how quickly you respond to different types of common drugs.
Yeah.
We're also going to do things like the CYP1A2, the vitamin B, vitamin D, things, and then come up with a program for you.
Come up with a recommended program for you,
and give us a couple of weeks, and then I can come back and talk about it with you.
Okay, right. We're gonna drop sizes.
Hold on.
What size are you? I'm size 12.
I've dropped from waist size. I say, you're disappearing as well. I say, look at
that's an exaggeration. Both of you are not disappearing. Neither am I.
Hang on a minute. Hold on.
One of the other things you can actually measure how you metabolize iron, how you're not able to absorb calcium. How it doesn't digest dairy. It can tell you all of that.
That's right.
Lactose intolerance and all sorts of things.
We look at gluten intolerance, lactose intolerance. I mean, that's a big fashion, right? People go in. I've seen it in pizza restaurants in KL in Singapore where you walk in and the waiter says, do you want gluten-free pizza? I'm like, no. So it's like, why should you do that? And a lot of parents try that for their children.
Yeah.
Sometimes that gluten-free and lactose-free diets are, you know, parents think, oh, it'd be better for my kid. It's used for children, you know, for all sorts of reasons, including autism. And sometimes parents will try it and it's like, well, it didn't work. Nothing happened.
Right. Okay.
So there are genetic markers that are associated with gluten intolerance and lactose intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
In a couple of weeks.
All right. In a couple of weeks as to
how
we're...
make a special excursion and come back and tell you.
How we're actually doing. All right. So what about these mail order things? So if I were to do this swab test and then send it through the mail, I mean, how... I mean, we trust you, Dr. Arif, you know, and you're taking it back to...
Yes.
We're assuming our swab test is in safe hands.
Safe hands. I would personally take it back to the lab.
What about mail order? Sending it back through, you know...
I think what you have to look at is it's important to look at most of these companies, you know, will have a sample report. And sometimes these sample reports, you have to be a mathematician and a geneticist and try to work out what the hell is going on. They're very complicated.
Mm.
And we find that, you know, some people come to us and even their doctors can't interpret their reports, which is a big fail. So the aim is, and you know, the report that we've come up with is designed to be really, really straightforward. It's very graphical, has a graphical interface, and you know, in Juniverse, what we're trying to do is make it straightforward. It's more like a dashboard with recommendations all in one place. Now, in terms of who to trust, who not to trust, I don't want to name anybody, obviously, on air, but I think you have to look at the company's background, where they are, who are the people involved with it, are they running it themselves, or they say just, there are a lot of companies, I won't mention any names, that don't actually run the test themselves, it goes off somewhere, you don't know where. So it's important to have, and these companies should be accredited, they should have some sort of accreditation, they should have someone who is medically qualified, you know, involved in the reporting, because it's very easy to get it wrong. And that's why I said hocus pocus. There are some hocus pocus.
Why do you say it's easy to get it wrong? I mean, what can you...
The thing is, it looks so simple,
really.
The one company I can talk about publicly is, you know, because it's being talked about in the press, is a company called 23andMe. It's a Google-owned company. And they got into a lot of trouble last year when the FDA actually banned their test.
Mm.
And the reason why the FDA banned their test is they were reporting things like risk of developing cancer. And when you look at the underlying data, it was based on one marker, one study done somewhere in Finland, which is very
not
weak.
Applicable.
You know, it's very weak.
Okay.
Something we're very careful of is, you know, there should be a lot of data around it.
Arif, I think in the future, this is what will happen, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, like Mira, I'm warming up to this. You know, in the future, I will
warming up to certain
things. That's right.
And the reason we're warming up to this, George, is because it has to do with weight loss.
Correct.
Don't
and
you
then
think?
Also, well, it, it's vanity, right? To some degree. That's okay. So I've got three questions. If in the future, how do you ensure that my personal data is not used for further interpretation of a wider picture? This is question number one. Number two is that who's actually interpreting this and who's giving me that recommendation is what I'm interested in, you know, to say, look, you have to do this, you have to do that. And how do I know it's not open to commercial manipulation?
Yeah.
And lastly, if I choose to know more, what else can I know with the current knowledge?
Okay, three great questions. And they're actually serious questions, so I'll address them seriously. The first question in terms of data security and what happens to your data. Now, again, I'm quoting 23andMe because it's public information. I don't want to discredit anybody else or credit anybody else. So 23andMe, for example, it's on there. It's not very obvious, but you go to the terms and conditions. They sell your data to pharmaceutical companies.
Yep.
They'll sell it. They have sold it. They've made a lot of money. Google, the big brother of all data, right? So they are selling the data. You send them. They don't charge that much money, but they sell your data, and you have no control over it anymore. I think any reputable company, and we do this as well, is the data is encrypted. It's only used for your result. We don't use it for any other purpose. And we follow UK guidelines, which are very strict guidelines. So, you know, I mean, as a company, we would be totally discredited if we started to, you know, give out your data to other people. So, you know, after 5 years, we delete the data. After 1 year, we destroy the sample. You can request for it to be destroyed immediately if you wish. There is a consent form where you can tick that option.
Okay.
So that's really important. Second point was
who's interpreting me advice.
Now, the initial report is a combination between using genetic information and what's already known to generate the report. And then we have a clinical nutri genomic specialist, somebody who is a medical doctor, but also has a specialty in nutrigenomics, who pulls together the program, right? So that is not straightforward to do. It's impossible. No one can say, and I certainly don't say, and we don't say it for Genoverse, you know, where it's 100% perfect. But we like to think that we get it very close in terms of known science today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The third question.
But the third question is that, okay, look, if I decided now, you've got my genetic material, I have decided I want to know a lot more about myself genetically.
Yes.
With the current knowledge, what else can you tell me about me with this bottle of my own sample?
Okay, great question. So again, you know, in Malaysia, there are no rules in terms of this kind of testing. So what we do is we follow the highest standard of what is available internationally. And right now, in terms of this kind of testing, it's the U.S. You know, I know we can joke about Trump and co, but the U.S. actually leads in many fields, including this. In terms of law, the law is based on this phrase, George, medically, which is termed as incidental findings.
Mm-hmm.
So you submit the test and you want to know about your exercise potential and diet and whatever, and say we find, not in yours, God forbid, or Mira's, but somebody else's, we find that there's an increased probability of developing a certain type of disease, let's say, which was not related to why you wanted the test.
That's right, because we wanted it for lifestyle.
Exactly. That's called incidental findings. And there is a rule about that. There is not a law, but there is a rule about that, which has been implemented in the US, which is that if the individual and that individual's doctor has requested the reporting of incidental findings, you have to report it. But if they have not requested it, then the recommendation is to go back to their doctor and ask their doctor whether you'd like to report it back to your patient.
Is it an assault to find out something that I don't want to know? Because in medical viewpoint, if I check somebody's HIV without asking him his status.
George, the analogy I would use, and I don't want to sound controversial, the analogy is if you do an ultrasound for somebody, right? I'm sure you do that for your
patients, that's
right. You do ultrasound and you're kind of probing around the kidney,
and you
see, oh God, you know, if you see a tumor
in pancreas, for example,
right? What do you do?
Yeah.
Right. So that's an incidental finding because that patient's come to you for some sort of urinary something tract problem.
Sure, but then,
and then you find a tumor, you know. So that's, we call that, in my view, that's an incidental finding. And then it's an ethical judgment in terms of whether or not you tell the patient.
So for me, it's whether or not it's life-threatening and how sure are you that this will actually lead to
it happens
disease.
All the time.
With
in
a tumor,
life,
it's obvious, right?
Yeah.
You see it. But it, with a gene test like this, how sure are we that this will lead to
the accuracy?
To this?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, when you answer that question, say, how many things can I know about myself apart from cancer? What else do we know that is available at the market.
We'll come back and find out more up next after the market update on BFM 89.9.
Doctor in the House, brought to you by AIA Vitality.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's our Doctor in the House program. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with me, together with Dr. Arif Anwar, our geneticist. If you notice, I just dropped it. I don't need to call you semi-resident, resident. We'll just drop it.
From now on, you are resident because you need to tell us what's going on.
Okay, we're discussing nutrigenomics, which is how we metabolize and utilize nutrients in relation to your genes. Dr. Arif has now carried out a swab analysis for both George and I, whereby he has now a sample of our inner cheek swab.
Cells.
Cells.
Buccal cells.
And then he's probably going to come back and tell us how we metabolize caffeine, for an example. What else are you going to tell us?
Well, this is it, you see. This is what we were saying just earlier, is we'll tell you what you requested.
On
diet
and
food and
exercise
and exercise and drug response and caffeine response and sugar and fat. But if you want to know other stuff, then we can also tell you in terms of risk of the things you don't want to know, Meera. Okay. You've said in the past different diseases.
Yes, correct. Mm? I don't want to know any of
that.
But isn't it common sense that if I eat well or I eat healthy and I exercise, isn't that good enough? Why do I need to know this?
You know, I used to think that. And, you know, I've been in love with genetics since I was 5. It's true.
What on earth did you know at 5 years old about
it? No, I was really into it. I was
you
really
knew
into it.
You knew what genes were?
I was really into it.
Five?
I was really into it. Anyway, and you're right. Let's think about that. We all know that. Everybody knows that. If you just eat carrots all day.
No, you don't have to do that.
And run 10 kilometers a day, then you're going to be super healthy and you'll never get diabetes. You'll never get... We all know that. Of course we all know that. The difference is when you are given a report and it actually states that there is evidence, right, which can guide what you should eat and what you should not eat, how you should exercise and what you should exercise, which drugs you have to be really careful for. You know, if you go and see your doctor and you say, well, actually, by the way, I am a slow metabolizer of morphine and I'm a fast metabolizer of Plavix and whatever. That guides you have actual evidence. We all know these
things. She's never going to take morphine, right?
It's like fingers crossed.
That's right.
Not for pain relief.
Yeah, not for pain relief anyway.
But in terms of food, we all eat food every day. We all should exercise, but not many of us know what the right thing to do is and what are the wrong things to do. And specifically in terms of vitamins, there are massive differences in terms of vitamin levels based on your DNA. And I've done this test myself 5 years ago.
Okay.
I did it five years ago.
And what did you find out?
And I found out two or three very important things. I found out that I have a mutation, which means that I have very low levels of vitamin D.
Okay.
Like, not just a little bit low, George, off the scale, the lowest scale, massively low, right? You know, almost negligible levels.
Okay.
So, and I found this out, and then I did the test on my kids.
Right.
They all have the same mutation.
Okay.
And then we did a blood test, went to our clinic in Bangsa and did the blood test, and the doctor's like, oh my God, it's almost, your vitamin D is like, not even registered. It's very, very low. So since then, my kids, me, my wife, my parents, I told my sisters, they did the same test. They're all on vitamin D supplements.
Supplements.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Right, okay. All right then. That's interesting.
That's one example. I found out many other things.
Sure.
As well.
So some people feel that genetic science is too young to provide nutritional advice.
Mm-hmm.
They feel we have a long way to go in development of practical tools for this. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay. I think that's right. Partially. We know, I think what's important is to report on what we know today, right? Report on what we know today and what is reliably known today. And that's really what we're doing. We're reporting on what is reliably known today. In terms of coming up with your day-to-day, everything you should eat, the whole year plan, no one knows. But things to avoid, things to focus on, things not to have too much of, things to be careful of, some of those things are already known, and why not take advantage of modern science?
What are your thoughts, George? I mean, do you
okay,
think?
Right. I've been quiet because, you know, I've been having second thought. I've been thinking about
He's
this.
He's worried after
no,
he
no,
gave
no,
you
no,
that.
No, 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 no. I was
those
worried.
Those cells from his cheeks.
I was worried in a sense that, you know, initially this is all fun and fitness, which is what is written in the brochure here. And then I like to, you know, that's my second question is that who's giving me advice here? And then, like Mira said, what difference is that going to make for most people? Because they know eating fatty food is bad for you, and then the genes tells you that, and so what? I agree with that to some degree. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, I may tailor my workout towards that, and it's fine. You know, for the first time, I actually looked through all the things that can test for cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, drug response, male cancers, and aging and brain. These are the things that apparently you have reasonable accuracy. And Mira knows that for all these years that she knows me, I don't test for anything because I have absolute fear. I have this kind of like phobia about knowing. Mm-hmm. For the first time, I actually decided that I probably want to know now. You know, for that, maybe you should come back and tell us. That's why
you
I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry.
I'm going to let you test all that, and you're going to come back and tell us what does that mean to me.
I do know about going on air with this
like,
result.
Actually, you know, I can empathize. I can empathize with that.
It's just because I suddenly realized that, you know what? What harm does it do? It just tells me what my destiny is. So what? Let's be it. Right. Okay. That's, in some way, maybe I will change my lifestyle because of that.
See, I have a colleague who worries about his cholesterol level, right? And he's scared every time he gets his annual blood report. And he's like, oh, God, what's it going to be? Right. And every time he gets it, he's like, phew, you know, I need to work a little harder, or I can maybe step back a little bit. So
and enjoy life.
We all, I feel, George, seriously, you know, I'm not trying to make fun of it. I can imagine how anybody would feel like that. You know, you feel apprehension, you'd worry, you know, what is my result going to look like? But I think once you know, it's a beautiful thing to have because you can use that to guide parts of your life.
Is it expensive?
No, it is not expensive.
Yeah, tell us a bit.
Less than 1,000 ringgit. And we're running a thing right now where it's less than 500 ringgit. Okay, if you go to the Syngenix website.
You know, George, sometimes I think it's just us not wanting to know, and these are just mere excuses. And actually, these results could actually be a motivation for you to just be a little bit more aware when you eat something that at the back of your mind, you know what, that test said you really shouldn't be eating this.
Motivation.
All right.
Motivation is. Yeah. And, you know, we do
that.
It when we do our blood test for cholesterol. We go, I have a cardiologist who I go and see every 2 or 3 years and he gives me the all clear. But I worry about it. And you know, he's told me certain things and I've acted upon it.
Mm-hmm. And it has worked.
Well, I'm still here.
Yeah. That is not answering my question. So
I want to answer your question. What was the question?
So has it worked?
Well,
has it changed?
Has it changed anything?
So in terms of when I look at what I've done, so my test when I ran this test, it showed that the vitamin D thing was coming up very strongly. I'm saying personal information, but it's my test, so I can say whatever I want. So it showed that, you know, I have a much higher risk of colorectal cancer. Right, so I've cut back on certain things, certain types of foods that are related to an increased risk of colorectal cancer, and cut back on those things. So it's not like I'm going to do a colonoscopy every year, but I've cut back on certain foods. I mean, it's well known that certain foods, like red meat, for example, or fried food, lead to an increase in colorectal cancer.
But that's what I'm saying, right? That's general knowledge. Everybody knows that.
Well, you see, what do you do? I wasn't doing it. Now that I know, I do it. It's like if you get a high cholesterol result, you know, are you still going to go and do the same, behave the same way? Are you going to change your habit? If you have high blood pressure, are you going to change your habit?
Will this test help us decide on our exercise regime? George does cycling now. What if it says, you know, cardio doesn't work for him? Then what does he do?
Well, we will tell you what we find, and based on that, make recommendations.
Okay, George, you better hope cycling. Cardio. Well, that's cardio, right? Whether or not it's cycling, running, you know, that kind of thing. For some people, it doesn't really work as well. Endurance training is better than compared to some cardio activity. So
that's right.
Interesting. We look forward to those results.
Awesome.
It really depends, and then we'll decide whether we want to go to air with that. What is your takeaway, Dr. Arif?
So I think the key takeaway from today is science moves extremely fast, right? And the knowledge that scientists have is increasing very fast. It is not 100% complete. And I think when it comes to personal genetic testing, the real focus should be on what is reliably known today. And a lot of things are reliably known today. And I think, Mira, you used the key word for today in terms of this hour, motivation. This gives you the right motivation to act upon something that is concrete science.
Well, I agree with that. And the motivation is, it was, I think I'm quite impressed that these days we have things like that. I also agree what Mira said, that it's too early for us to have definitive knowledge about how this is going to influence us. But I think that is a small baby step in the right direction. And however, I still think that with a lot of regulations and a lot of cautions, I think we will be heading the right direction.
Fantastic. You can cry now, Dr. Arif. Well, thank you for joining us.
I've been
us.
Wanting you to take this test for years, 5 years.
And we do this on air.
Today is the day.
Thank you.
You did it on air.
Yes, we did.
Part.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, and Dr. Arif Anwar, our resident geneticist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Coming up next, Dr. Raymond talks to me about how sleep, the lack of sleep, affects your hunger on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. It's our Health and Living segment, and a BBC show brings a discussion about a bad night's sleep and how it affects your blood sugar control and hunger, even in the volunteers who were actually part of this study. So I have Dr. Raymond Tan, a consultant ENT, snoring and sleep expert, treasurer of the Sleep Disorder Society of Malaysia, to shed more light on the relationship between sleep and hunger. How are you, Dr. Raymond?
I'm good, Mira. Thank you for calling me.
What did you think of this study?
It brings a message home that sleep is very important when it comes to regulation of our appetite and of our hunger. It's often thought of myth that the more a person sleeps, the fatter the person becomes. And the opposite, actually. Medical research tells us that the people who sleep enough tend to become people who are slimmer. And there are two hormones which are involved in appetite and in hunger, called leptin and ghrelin. An easy way to remember these two hormones is L stands for lean and G for gorge. Okay, L, the leptin hormone, levels are increased when we've got enough sleep, and leptin works on the hypothalamus in the brain, and it then reduces our appetite. And it also increases body metabolism, and it pushes our body metabolism into the fat-burning cycle.
Right.
G stands for gorge, okay? And ghrelin is produced, again, another G, produced by the gastrointestinal cells, the G cells. And we know that in sleep-deprived individuals, ghrelin levels are increased. Ghrelin is an important hormone in stimulating hunger in a person.
How much is sleep is really enough?
The vast majority of adults require between 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. And it's always advocated that this sleep is slept in a single block. That afternoon nap actually is good also. A lot of studies again show the importance of a short nap, 15 to 30 minutes in the afternoon, has also been shown to reduce the level of stress hormones in a person. And also a Greek study done by the University of Athens showed a 63% reduction in the rate of heart disease among men who took a 15 to 30 minute siesta 3 times a week. But the golden rule to remember is the amount of hours of sleep that you need and the time that you need to wake up in the morning without the aid of an alarm clock is the number of hours of sleep you need at night.
Okay.
So if you're probably using an alarm clock to wake up every morning, then you're probably not getting enough sleep.
Okay, that would probably make most of us, actually.
Yeah, and this is a small proportion, a very small proportion, and you're looking at about less than 5% of the population who've got what they call the Margaret Thatcher gene. They can get by with just 4 hours of sleep, and that was the case with Margaret Thatcher.
Okay, so it's only 5% of us. How does that affect children?
Interesting study done recently by researchers in London. They put 2 groups of kids, okay, one group in a sleep-deprived setting and the other kids were allowed to sleep their normal hours of sleep. They found that the kids in the sleep-deprived group consumed 350 kilocalories of food more than the kids in the normal sleep hours group. We also know that kids who do not sleep enough have a higher chance of developing a type 2 diabetes.
Is this something new, though? I mean, have we always known this relationship between sleep and hunger?
More and more information is known over the last decade or so. A lot of the research that's been done into leptin and ghrelin has been gathered from studies done in the States, looking at what is known as the Wisconsin sleep cohort. A lot of studies have been done using data collected from this cohort of patients. And why is leptin and ghrelin function in this way? The hypothesis is that it's part of evolution. During the long winter months, it would be beneficial for the sleeping adults because they slept longer in winters and they didn't eat as much. And there's scarcity of food during the winter months to have then higher levels of leptin and lower levels of ghrelin. So they slept and they were not woken up by feeling hungry. And the opposite is true. During the summer months, that's when there's more game and there's more food to be gathered. And during those summer months, the primitive men used to work harder to gather the crops, to hunt the animals, and they didn't need to sleep as much. And that's why the opposite is true.
Good to know that relationship between sleep and hunger. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Dr. Raymond Tan, consultant ENT, snoring and sleep expert, treasurer of the Sleep Disorder Society of Malaysia. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Doctor in the House was brought to you by AIA Vitality, a health program that rewards your healthy choices. This program is presented by AIA, the real life company.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.